Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 62. Thank you again, you wonderful listeners who reach out and make sure that I keep Mormon Happy Hour alive. I got a beautiful message through the website this week. Hopefully this listener doesn't mind if I read a bit. I'm indulging in a little feel-good feedback, so this is for me. Dear Colleen, I would like to let you know how much I enjoy Mormon Happy Hour, and I hope that you will continue to host your podcast in spite of the obstacles you may be facing. In episode 61, you stated that you had broke the podcast. I hope that you will be able to fix it. Where else am I going to stay current on what's happening in the world of Mormonism? No one else has your moxie. I enjoy your humor, snarkiness, insight, commentary, and everything else you bring to the show, including, of course, your tips on the forbidden fruits of alcohol, coffee, and tea. I enjoy listening to the variety of guests that you invite on to your podcast, too. Offer fewer episodes if you need to. I will continue to listen, so please don't give up. Thank you so much, dear listener, for your positive words. They were exactly what I needed to help fix the broken podcast. So thank you. I will definitely stick in as long as I possibly can. I also had to look up the word moxie, and it's all I ever wanted to be. So I think I'll be writing this down and putting it up where I can see it always, because it does fill me up with all of the warm fuzzies that I need to keep me making kick-ass content for all of you. So, thank you. I'm still hard at work looking into local small businesses to partner with for sponsorship. Several coffee shops, an excellent local coffee roaster who just sent me some coffee, a distillery, and a few breweries. If you have a favorite local business that you would love to see promoted on Mormon Happy Hour, please let me know. My dream with sponsors is if I'm going to take your time telling you about something, I damn well want it to be worth your time. And I'm all about promoting small businesses anyway, especially if there's a post-Mormon reason to do so. So if you love Mormon Happy Hour and you love some local small businesses, please share them with me. It's a new month, and that means a thank you shout out to new Patreon subscribers. This is a great way to join in and ensure that Mormon Happy Hour can continue to thrive. So check out the tiers and the different benefits at each level and pick the one that speaks to you. I'm sending out 4 bundles of swag this week to Patreon subscribers, so be on the lookout, Marianne, Jonathan, Tim, and Emily. There are stickers, buttons, and Mormon Happy Hour pass-along cards headed your way. As for new subscribers to thank this month, the one and only Marie Kent of My Book of Mormon podcast joined at the Shots $1 level. Thank you to Scarlett, who also joined at the Shots $1 level. Best name ever, Tim the Little Factory Foreman joined at the Whole Keg $5 level, ensuring him swag and access to all videos exclusive to Patreon. Welcome fellow post-mo creative content genius Jonathan Streeter, who joins at the $10 VIP lounge and gets an automatic swag bundle in the mail, as well as video and bonus content access. Thank you to Elena, who joined at the Forbidden Fruit $2 level. Thanks, lovely. She will be earning swag after 5 months at this level and video access multiple times each month. Thank you to Erin, who also joined at the Forbidden Fruit $2 level. She's a wonderful listener. I love your participation and support, Erin. Thank you to Ryan, who also joined at the Forbidden Fruit $2 level. He's got some great ideas regarding how to plan your next vacation as a post-mo and fully participate in all the things you weren't able to experience in the past. So this sounds like a lot of fun to explore. I just can't wait. If I didn't read your name, that means that I haven't received your pledge yet and that you are missing out. If you aren't using that monthly coffee budget that normal people are, then throw it towards me. I'll make sure it goes to good use to make Mormon Happy Hour even better. And I am already saving up and making plans to be at the Salt Lake City 2019 Sunstone. This is a huge trip, and I get to meet so many of you. So an enormous thank you to those of you who contribute to make trips like that possible. Also, looking for 2 things if you happen to come across them. a book called The Not Even Ones Club by Wendy Watson Nelson. It requires a much-needed response on Mormon Happy Hour. Call it a public service announcement of books worthy of the controversial burn. Sure, I could buy it online, used even, but I'd much rather get it out of circulation and get it from a fellow Exmo. I'll pay shipping or send you swag, your choice. Next, dude, do you remember Postum? I'm dying to take a trip down memory lane and tell you all about how Postum warmed my precious Mormon childhood. But since it's only available in Zion, I'm looking at all you righteous residents of Zion. Can you find some for me? Again, I'll pay shipping or swag, your choice. Finally, I have arrived at today's episode agenda. First up, I have 2 6-minute skinny dips into nutty Mormon history with our host Mithrin. It's just been too long. Our first skinny dip, do Mormons have horns? And then the second one, Mormon artifacts, in the style of Warehouse 13. If you're sci-fi nerds like Mithrin and I, you know what that means. The catch with these skinny dip segments, however, is they will only be available on Patreon until about this summer. Then they will be released publicly. So if you're a subscriber, head over now and check them out. If not, watch for them. Hopefully around May, they will be released publicly. Next, I have part 2 of the post-Mo love stories I collected around Valentine's Day. This one is darling and crazy all at once. I am happy to introduce you to Laurie, a wonderful Mormon Happy Hour listener, supporter, and friend. And to finish up this episode, Marie Kent and I pull off another glorious chapter of Faith Precedes the Miracle, another hideous book written by the 12th president of the LDS Church, Spencer W. Kimball, the one and only. The three of us tackle the topic of love versus lust, and I'll let you be the judge of who the winner is. Enjoy! Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. This is part 2 of the Happy Valentine's Day love, post-Mormon love stories. And I have another wonderful guest with a fantastically wild story. So welcome to Laurie. Mormon Happy Hour to Laurie.
Thank you.
She is going tell us her wild post-Mormon love story. Laurie, you can start back as far as you want, or we can, whatever you're comfortable with. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, my name's Laurie. I live in Utah. Imagine that. Post-Mormon. I'm an official apostate as of like October sometime. I got my official letter that I sent in. Yes, thank you. It was... So I'd been gone for 15 years and kind of just did another deep dive back in, dealing with some of my own personal emotional health that I've been working on. Mm-hmm. So I kind of dove back in to Mormonism that way, because I walked away really 15 years ago and just knew it didn't make me feel good. So I just kind of left, like we all do. And we, you know, shrink down and scoot out, and we still show up to everyone's blessings and baptisms and sit outside the temple with our coffee and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, jumped back in down that rabbit hole.
So did you start attending again, or did you just step back into the issues?
Yes. Step back into the issues, because I could see that there was more work there that I needed to do, because I had left so quickly because I just didn't feel good and just tried to shove it down. I have, really briefly, I have a 24-year-old son that is the product of sexual abuse that happened to me when I was younger. I was 16. I was 18 when I got pregnant, but I was 16 when it all went down with a much older Mormon man, 37 years old. I was 16.
Oh, not good. So sorry.
Yeah. So, and he's still active and in the church and, you know, living that whole thing. So I think that's a lot of why I left, because I knew that he was still, you know, he's with this wife that he was, it's a long story. We won't even get into that. So anyways, tried after that situation was over. That was a 7-year part of my life, from when I was 16 till I was 23, till I was able to actually close that part.
Yeah.
And then I tried going back into Mormonism all the time, trying to like make it right for me, make it feel right, because that's what I'm supposed to do. So I would go to Deseret Book and I'd buy my Michael McLean CD and I'd put it in my car and I'd like get all holy ghosted out and spiritual and feel like, okay, I'm going to do this. I can do this. You know, I married this guy for like a year. I hate to even say I married him because it wasn't very long, but I did marry this man for a year. My son was 9 at the time. Mm-hmm. No, he was like 8 when we got married. We were only married for a year. He was a lot like certain type of man that we were talking about before, that's a little bit adventurous in his spirit with other women. You know, called forth a lot of relationships like that over the years, trying to heal myself, really. But I kept calling in these same kind of people. Mm-hmm. Anyways, got divorced from him because that clearly didn't work. And we're getting to my love story now. So I had a girlfriend that called me and she said, "Lari, I have these 2 tickets for this cruise and my husband and I are just not in a good place. I cannot go with him. You know, would you want to buy these from me?" And I'm like, "Dude, I am like getting divorced. I have like $212 to my name. I'm losing all everything right now. Like, no, I can't go on a cruise. And I definitely can't buy 2 cruise tickets. Yeah, it's not happening." So she, at this time I lived in a house that I was, you know, liquidating pretty much. And she's like, "Well, what if I traded you for like your pool table?" And I don't know what else was down there. Like, anyways, so I'm like, I could go with you, you know? And she's like, "Okay, let's go together." You know? So I was divorced. She was getting divorced. And we're these two single, kind of single. She's not technically really, but girls on this cruise ship, you know? And I said yes. And it was like, my spirit just told me, like, "Girl, you're going on this cruise. Doesn't matter what." Like, I had enough to buy my plane ticket to get to California. Mm-hmm. And literally that's it. I had no money for drinking, no money for tips, like nothing. So we learned really fast that if we were like flirty with each other in front of the bartenders, got free drinks. So we were taken care of the whole cruise by the cutest bartender. He kept us well. I mean, everything just worked out. It was just cute. But then we get, you know, we're like, we weren't even trying to hook up, honestly, or meet men or anything. We just needed some downtime. You know, we were both in that space. Mm-hmm. And we notice as we're getting on the ship that it's just like filled with all these little ladies, these little gray haired ladies with red hats and their purple clothes. I don't know if you guys have all seen them or heard of them. I didn't know who they were before then, but it's the Red Hat Club. And it's like a society, right? That just like, they do trips and luncheons and whatever. So pretty much like 90% of our cruise was filled with the Red Hat Club ladies. And they were so sweet and so cute and would always tell you like how beautiful you were. I mean, they were like having your like 900 grandmas on your vacation with you. You know what I mean? Like, you just felt really well taken care of. But it didn't do so good for when you would go to the, you know, things at night and the bars and stuff. And there was like maybe like 9 of us, you know? And so we had this little crew of like younger people. It was a fun crew, you know? And so we'd been on the boat about 3 days. I'd met another dude that I was kind of hanging out with a little bit, but not really, because he had a girlfriend on the cruise, and it, long story. Anyways, that got shut down. And I'm standing in the bar, our special bar that we'd go to every night. And my girlfriend had met this guy a few nights before, super outgoing, so nice, really into like energy work and he was really cool. And we'd hung out with him a few times and we knew he was on the cruise with his dad and his brothers, but I hadn't seen the dad or the brothers, you know? So this particular night, we're probably 3 nights in, we're standing in the bar and the guy that we had met from before comes rolling down the, you know, into the thing. They're all dressed up for like formal night on a cruise, you know, when you have your fancy clothes on. And the 3 of them come walking in, and immediately I was drawn to one of the 3, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was the shyest one. He's the youngest brother. So he's 5 years younger than me. So this is back when I'm like 29, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's only 24, which to me is crazy to think about now. Anyways, I'd look at my friend and I'm like, I call the young one. Like, that was my thing. At this point, I didn't want a relationship. I just like a young, hot guy was like pretty much going to be perfect for me in that moment. You know, like I didn't right. want anything else besides like, just be nice to me and let's have a drink, you know, like mm-hmm. that's all I care about. So we end up hanging out and hitting off like crazy. Like, and he's just the sweetest, like, I couldn't even believe that I found this man in the middle of the Mexican Riviera, you know, and I didn't want anything serious. And I had a real problem with how young he was. I had an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. he seemed really young to me. And so we hung out the whole cruise. He had rental properties. He had a great job. He had all this stuff. And I'm like, it's either like the total package or he's full of shit, which I'd experienced both. So, you know, well, no, I'd only experienced the full of shit part. But so we get home. He calls me the next night or the very first day we're home and wants to go out the next night, comes and gets me. Like, it was just, we lived like 30 minutes apart, maybe. So pretty close considering we were in Mexico, you know, the middle of the ocean, basically, considering, mm-hmm. you know, and it just went like a million miles an hour. We ended up moving in together like 5 months into it, 5-6 months into it with wow. my son, you wow. know, which was a big thing for my Mormon family because I moved in with my boyfriend before right. we were married. Mm-hmm. So we lived together for a couple of years before we got married, and we've been married for 14 years. Yeah.
Wow. That's
that was
amazing.
Slow. That was like, that was a fast story. I left a bunch of stuff out or something.
Well, tell me about what was his reaction to, like, have you introduced him to your Mormonism, your Mormon past?
Oh, yes. Yes. He, okay. So he grew up in Utah. We live in, like a little mountain town. It's called Eden. He grew up in Huntsville, very rural, you know, mm-hmm. he grew up with zero religion, not at all, no religion at all, which wow. is a lovely way to be raised. I think seeing him as a human now, he doesn't have all that baggage that I have. And I love to see him in that. He doesn't have it, you know, it's not there. It's really cool. But the first time he'd ever been into a Mormon church was when he went to a baby blessing with me, or mm-hmm. been to a sacrament meeting, I guess I should say. He'd been into a Mormon church in like Boy Scouts when he was younger during mm-hmm. the week, but he'd never been to a Mormon church on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how do you live in Utah and never end up in church? Like from your friend yeah. or your so-and-so went on a mission or something, you know, mm-hmm. nothing ever. Felt it. One other funny thing I have to tell you about is on this cruise, I have this on my little note. So, you know how I said I was so, like, I knew I was going no matter what. So the girl I was going with, our flight left really early and she was coming to pick me up. She's like, I'm sorry, I'm at my parents' house. I'm trying to find my birth certificate. This is back before we needed, you know, passports to go to Mexico. And she's like, the only thing I can find is this long paper that has my birth certificate and my baptism certificate on the same thing. So it was like a copy, but right? It's like the birth certificate and her baptism certificate from the Mormon church, you know? And like, well, this totally looks fake with two things on one thing. And so I'm bust out these manicure scissors and I'm cutting the baptism certificate off the bottom of of her birth certificate. And I look at her and I'm like, dude, I'm going on this cruise. If you can't get through with this, I feel really bad, but just know I'm going without you. Like, I need this for me. Like, I knew I had to be on that boat and I was willing to just go by myself and
wow.
take her baptism certificate with me.
It was meant to be.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, it was pretty funny. Like, two girls cutting apart a bab. It was just a funny, it was a funny morning for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a crazy story. I don't know that I've ever met someone who's married someone that they met in a cruise bar. That's sexy.
It was pretty hot. Yeah, I think I zoomed through the story because we talked for a while before, so I feel like I might have zoomed through it. But do you have any other questions about it that I could answer for you?
So, like, what's his reaction been to Mormonism? What does he think? You have a crazy past? Since he didn't have much interaction with it while he was living in Utah. That's crazy that you met on a cruise in the Mexican Riviera and you both grew up in the same state.
Mm-hmm. And close to the same. I mean, I was technically in Davis County and he was in Weber County, but pretty close together, you know?
That's like crazy.
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. And so for the lot of our marriage and relationship, I haven't been in Mormonism. I haven't been dealing with that. I haven't. It was more like, oh, this is my Mormon family and, you know, let's go and put our, you know, beer in a Contigo cup so we can still drink while we go to these, you know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of stuff. It was never like, I have a pretty open Mormon family, like open-minded, and they love my husband. They love him because he's a great guy, and they know that. I had one brother when we moved in together that sent me this really lengthy letter about how could I do this, and he's not a priesthood holder, and how could I do this to my son, and he could never give me a temple marriage, and on and on and on, you know? And I was just like, I was really mad when I got the letter. And so I hand it to my husband or boyfriend at the time and let him read it. And he's like, oh, babe, he just doesn't know me. And I'm like, well, aren't you just so mad at what he said? He's like, honey, he's your brother. And he believes really strongly in this. And he just loves you. He just doesn't know me. He'll know me someday. And he'll be okay with it. And he was like 24 at the time. He's like an old soul. And he just kind of always has had that attitude. And now I feel like that brother loves him a lot, you know? So it was really sweet. That was one of my, and also I give props to that brother for actually caring. Like, even though I was mad in the moment, now where I'm at, as I've gone down the deep dive and I have a lot of emotion around what was fed to me a lot of my life and that stuff. Now I look at it and think, of course, I'm like, how the hell do you guys believe this stuff about a lot of stuff? Mm-hmm. But I can at least look at him and say he believes it strongly enough that he wanted to share that with me. He cared about me in that way, even though I took it as rude at that time. Now my gripe is more with the rest of my Mormon family who just doesn't say anything. They don't ask me my story. They don't ask me about my son's father. They don't ask me about how I felt about it. They don't ask me about how the church handled it. How my parents asked it. No one asked me anything. So that is more painful to me than having my brother say, oh, he can't give you all the, at least he was passionate about his beliefs and what he believed. That's one of my biggest gripes is that people are so into Mormonism. But if you really are, aren't you devastated that I'm an apostate, that I've been cast into outer darkness? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't you be like devastated? Like, I would be, if I really believed it, I'd be devastated. And I'd be at my brother's door being like, look, you're like, this is legit. You're going to be cast into outer darkness. Like, let's have a discussion about this. Yeah. I've not received one bit of that. You know what I mean? And that's probably been the most painful thing for me over the past year is to realize that, you know, and go, oh, that kind of sucks. Kind of hurts, you know? But then yet when I'm going through this and having emotion and feeling, I'm supposed to shut that down and not make anyone uncomfortable.
Yeah, that sucks. That part really sucks.
Well, there goes my middle fingers for the Patreon users. It just makes me mad. Sorry. But it's like my biggest gripe right now with it. I'm just like, why do we all have to be quiet and make you comfortable on our faith transition? No, I'm done playing that dynamic. Mm-hmm. I am. And I don't mean it in a hateful, mean way, but I want to be heard just as much as they want to be heard.
Yeah.
And I think that that's okay to ask that. Like, I don't think we should have to be like, hey, I read some really troubling things. Would you read them and let's have a conversation about it? That should be normal, but that's not how it is. It's like you say one word that you have any kind of information and you're like, they're like, get the F away from me. You know? Yeah. I hate that dynamic. That honestly is my mission, to change that dynamic for people to like, be able to say, yeah, I'm an ex-Mo and I freaking love it and I'm proud of it. And here's the reasons why. Mm-hmm. Here, you know, and not have that shame like so heavy on him all the time. Cause I mean, I'm sure you felt it. Like the other day when I was listening to your interview with the post-Mormon mental health lady, you know, about what we want to hear from believing members. Really, it was a really good, really good podcast. But I was more angry than she was. I'm like, yeah. I can't do what you're asking me to do until I break some plates and shit. Like, I need to be mad for a minute about this. You know what I mean? And I don't think I think we get to be mad for a minute.
Yes.
It breaks some plates and shit, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on my journey to in post-Mormonism. But I feel so strongly about it, even though I didn't have much of an attachment to it when I first left. Right now going in, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, you meet this whole group of people that are freaking amazing, mm-hmm. and they're good. I mean, it takes a lot to like leave the Mormon church. It's not easy, and mm-hmm. It's a big deal. And so it's a certain type of person that you know what I'm talking about, this ex-Mormon community. I love it. I'm like, these are my people. This is where I want to do some work, is in this area. I don't know exactly what that's going to be yet, but that's where it hits there for me big time. Awesome. So never in 10 million years thought I would be hanging out in this area at this time in my life, but it's like where I'm supposed to be. Yeah.
Wow. I love
Hallelujah.
That. And I feel like I love that you're honoring that, because I feel like in your life, like you've felt the call to where you need to be. So there's gotta be something to that. You felt the call mm-hmm. to be on that boat, you know, and look what that's brought into your life. And you're feeling the call to be in the ex-Mormon community. And like that's your place so right much. Now. And that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Cause you're at a place mm-hmm. where you can be there and you can, you want to do some good. So I really love that.
Yeah, definitely. There's so much to learn. So many places you can serve in the ex-Mormon community. There's a huge need for it. I feel like as I've gone searching myself for stuff, you know, it's like, there's anyone that feels like that. I feel like that has that yearning, like go for it, find a place where you can like, it's been the most healing thing for me to mm-hmm. go out and interact in groups and whatever with other ex-Mormons. And really that's been the most healing thing for me, more than mm-hmm. therapy or anything else. It's like just being with like-minded people that are going through the same types of trauma that you are, and being able to connect on that level, you know, that's been my, like, so transformative to me, and the people I've met, and mm-hmm. you know, like, it's like this is like the path I want to be on for sure. Feels right. Feels and, good.
And I've been interacting a lot more with ex-Mormons, obviously, in the past year. And mm-hmm. and I think one of the things that I've discovered is that the ex-Mormon crowd is there. They can be very like hot and cold. Like they can be amazing, and they can also be very scary, because when you're in that transition space, like I feel like sometimes the ex-Mormon community has a shelf life of about 5 years before they're just like, they move on. And it's mm-hmm. a transitionary place, because you go through so much growth and, you know, introspection and healing within those years. And then once you're done, you kind of just, okay, I'm ready for, I'll take my training wheels off and I'm ready for the real world. But mm-hmm. people within the ex-Mormon community and within that 5 year space need a lot of grace. Because mm-hmm. sometimes coming out of ex-Mormonism, like you can look at these people, and my husband's a Nevermo, and sometimes we'll interact with, you know, ex-Mos, and he's like, dude, that person is still so Mormon, you know, like he mm-hmm. can see it, he can smell it just coming off of them. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right, you know, and they'll have a lot of hangups.
They're Mormon, you know? Pheromones.
Yeah. And they'll have a lot of like that black and white kind of judgmental hang-ups still mm-hmm. that they have to work mm-hmm. through, and trauma and healing, and sometimes when you interact with them you get a little burned. But I feel like you have to like give them grace, because they're in a healing like period, and you know, they got to get through it.
I so agree with that. Yeah
And you know, speaking of like, you know, thoughts that hang on through your ex-Mormon transition. So I was sitting with a friend of mine who, she's an active Mormon, but she's very progressive, and she's working out where she stands, but she's actually in my mm-hmm. ward here, and we've known each other since BYU. So it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And we actually just went to the park today, and I was talking to her about tattoos, and we've talked about tattoos before, and she's kind of feeling out, you know, she's thinking about getting a tattoo. And I'm like, what? Like, she's an active Mormon. Tattoo. And I'm like, what? And
is it better in her mind to have it under the garments, or like is that more sacred to have it in a spot that would be where the garments cover, or is it more, you know what I mean? Like, which one is more okay with her is my question.
She just wants it somewhere where it won't be seen professionally. So she just wants it like under, like that's her only stipulation is, well, I want it somewhere where, you know, I can go to work and it won't be seen. And I'm like, totally respect that. And like every time we've talked about it before, I'm like, yeah, you know, like I've been out of the church for like 5 years now. And I just like, I don't think I want a tattoo. Like that's always been my response. It's like, I don't want one. And then like, as we were talking, like this has been like the second or third time we've talked about tattoos. I was like, you know what? And she's like, what? And I'm like, I think that's my thought, like thought stopping. Like, I think that's my hangover from church is like you bring up tattoos and I'm initially like, I'm excited about it for a second. And I think for a second. And then all of a sudden my brain like turns on. It's like, you don't want that. You just don't
your
want
body
it.
Is a temple. Your body is a temple.
Don't and it just like, it just turns all my like excitement off. My brain's like, shut it down. And I'm like, oh my God, like that's like a hangover. Like I need to flush that out. And like how many other things is my brain like shutting down that I really want, but my Mormon hangover, like my hangover is just like still like, no, you can't have that.
Yeah. So it's a big place of where you get lost is like where, like when obviously when people leave Mormonism, I'm going to drink. Like, what am I going to drink? And they'll deep dive into that. And it's like, oh, maybe I don't like drinking as much. Maybe I'll get a tattoo, you know? And then I'm the same way with a tattoo. I'm like, first, I never wanted one. And then this last 5 years I've gone through like, okay, yeah, I really want one, but I still can't find the perfect place and perfect thing. Mm-hmm. So then like a couple years ago, I'm like, I know I'm going to get my nose pierced. So like on my 40th birthday, I went down to Salt Lake. I went to Koi, like went to a nice place. I wanted it to be like, you know, well done. Got my nose pierced, a little tiny, tiny diamond. I'm a rebel. This is perfect. You know, like, it was definitely me wanting to like announce my rebelness. So let's think a little bit. And dude, my body just didn't want it. It kept getting affected. And we live, like I told you, off the beaten path. And one night I went to check it and it came up, it went out of my nose. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm done. Oh. I'm not a rebel anymore. I'm going to have to get a tattoo. This is not working. But I did try, and I do love a cute little nose ring, but it just don't work for me. Maybe I'll try again on the other side.
Did you get a tattoo?
I still have not. No. Maybe I'll come to Arizona and we can get matching tattoos. Yes, Mormon happy hour tattoos.
I don't think I'd be disappointed that would be awesome. About that.
I'm like crazy enough I'd do it. Would it have to be somewhere that nobody can see it?
Done. Your inner thigh. That wouldn't hurt, right?
Oh, I got lots of fleshy fat right there. I'll be fine.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, do you have any Valentine's Day plans with your post-mo sweetheart?
We are having a romantic evening at our home alone Friday night where they go to grandma's house.
Nice.
That's our romance. Yeah. But I'm not, I don't get super into like Valentine dates and roses and stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's just not my jam. I'd rather like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just not my thing. I do ask for chocolate covered strawberries, just four, like a little thing of them. Mm-hmm. And so he gets me those, which he bought on Monday this year. I'm like, but wait, it's Monday. He's like, I know there was no line. He's like, and you can enjoy them all week. I'm like, you're brilliant. So, you know, that's about as Valentine's-y as we get. Sorry. Nice. But we will have a fun date night. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix and chill is still a fun night, especially when there's no kids.
Yeah. I know. Seriously, like at this point, we're like, we really enjoy being in our home together alone. Like, why go out and spend $150 on dinner? We can like order sushi and just hang out at home. Like, we're excited about it.
Yeah, there's no dress code, and you can drink as much as you want and don't have to worry about getting home. And
exactly. Yeah. Amen. Amen to that.
Hey, so what are you drinking, by the way? Because we didn't do this at the beginning of the episode. What are
you drinking? We didn't. In all fairness, we've already cheersed, but we can do it again. So I have LaCroix and then some Blue Cheddar Parrot Bay. Blue Cheddar Bay coconut rum. This is, I was telling Colleen earlier, this is Kenny Chesney rum. I didn't even know he had rum. I didn't even know this was, but Kenny Chesney has his own rum. Apparently that's his. That was a gift actually from somebody. That's probably why I didn't know that, but Kenny Chesney has his own rum.
So is it flavored rum?
Coconut rum.
Perfect. No, the LaCroix. Is that
flavored? Oh, I'm sorry. The LaCroix. Yeah, this one is blackberry cucumber.
Ooh, is that good?
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Yeah. If it's like purple and green can, like the tall, skinny one.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. So I found a group of progressive relief society sisters locally. And I am bringing, they're having a brunch on Friday, and I'm bringing cocktails to a relief society.
Really?
I'm so excited.
Like for real or like mocktails?
No, cocktails.
They're going to drink the cocktails?
Well, they're very it's a very mixed group of like half of them are very recently out. Half of them are still in for whatever reason, but they're like mentally like on their way out. Like it's a very mixed group. And so they plan.
I wish I could fly in for that one.
Right?
Can we get our tattoos on Friday? Because that would be fun. That would be really, like the whole thing. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So I'm bringing.
I can't wait to hear about that.
Yeah. So I'm bringing my new favorite cocktail, which is a pineapple coconut seltzer and like LaCroix, but it happens to be, I don't have it in front of me. But it happens to be the Safeway brand. It's the only brand that covers or that carries a pineapple coconut, and it's really good.
Oh, so pineapple nice. Coconut
and a shot, and it's just a little tumbler. Like we have a little like whiskey glasses that I use that are the perfect. Uh-huh. So I do a quarter of a lime sweet, like juice.
Did
so
you
I
post that one on the group, that drink?
I think post I have. It? If I haven't,
I feel like you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I
used to use vodka, but now we've switched to coconut rum. So it's so funny that you're using coconut rum. That's what made me.
Kenny Chesney.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
All you're missing is a lime. So a quarter of a lime. And there's.
I don't have a lime. I have lime juice.
Yeah. There's something about the lime that it cuts through the alcohol taste. So it's just gone. Mm. So I use a quarter of a lime and I juice it because I get more actual juice than if I'm just my tiny weak cans are squeezing.
Hey man, you lose a lot of the lime if you don't get after it. Yeah.
So juiced a quarter lime, a shot of coconut rum, and then the half a can of the pineapple coconut seltzer. And it is sweet out of nowhere because there's a little bit of sugar in the coconut rum, but that's it. And so it's like low-cal and it's refreshing as hell. It's so good.
Yum.
And don't tell my doctor, so I can make it through three in a night and then I'm done.
Ooh, nice. That's pretty good. So Safeway in Utah, what's the brand? Like what would Safeway be in Utah? Like Kroger's, like Smith's, right? So what is the, you know what I mean? What's their like food club or what, you know what I mean? Like their Safeway brand.
Albertsons
is one. Albertsons. Yeah, we don't even have Albertsons anymore.
Okay, hang on. Safeway?
Now it's like Fresh Market and even some of those are gone. I don't know. I was just wondering which off-brand I could find in Utah.
Yeah.
Speaking of off-brands in Utah, you love a Moscow Mule, right?
I do.
Are you a Moscow Mule person? Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Kroger or Smith here, it's like hit and miss. You can't always find it, but they sell ginger beer in the 12 packs. Uh-huh. You know how their 12 packs are like $1.99 sometimes? Mm-hmm. And if you've ever bought ginger beer, like the ones I have right now, they're like $8.50 for four of them or something. For like four, they're so expensive. So that's another good tip for Smith's people.
Nice.
If you can find it. It's the Kroger brand ginger beer.
And is it in a can or a bottle?
Can. It's like in the 12 pack of cans. So you can get like a ton of it for $2 or $3. Yeah.
Cool. And that's a Kroger thing. So that would be available like in Arizona. That'd be Fry's. Good to know.
Yep, it's a Kroger thing.
Cool.
Yep.
Well,
I'm trying to think if I have any other good drinking tips, but.
And then I do. So I am drinking two things. I am finishing up my bottle of this. This is my new favorite. I don't know why. It's one of those cheapy wines, but this is. It's called
Fetzer.
It is Fetzer. And then the
I love it because it says an earth-friendly winery or something, doesn't it? I don't know. Yeah. I've always liked Fetzer though.
Yeah, and the I don't know how to pronounce this particular blend. Can you read that? The
oh, that's the no. I just say
the.
Does that sound like it?
The Jurwurz whatever the fuck is what I call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to try that because I've never even tried that.
Yeah. I tried their Riesling and I'm not a fan, but this one I really like. Yeah.
Is it too sweet for you or why didn't you like it?
Their Riesling's actually pretty tart. And I just
want I feel like I like Fetzer's Riesling. Like I went from Saint Chapelle, Special Harvest.
Uh-huh.
Special Harvest. Because that one, have you tried that one? That's no. So sweet.
Really?
And then, so then I went to their regular, Saint Chapelle's regular Riesling. And then I went to Fetzer's Riesling was like my next. Yeah. And I actually like Fetzer's Riesling.
Yeah, I'm just not there yet. I'm still on like the Barefoot Riesling because Barefoot Riesling is really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you'll get to a point like where I am like, I can't even do sweet wine anymore. Sometimes like I like, for me now, one of my favorite things is, I like Prosecco, which is like the Italian champagne, right?
Yeah.
From Italy. Corbel. It's Corbel Brut. That's what it is.
Okay.
So it's like anywhere from $13 to $17 a bottle, depending on where you are. Sometimes if it's on sale and whatever. But for whatever reason, that gives me the best like champagne buzz.
Yeah.
And absolutely, I can drink a whole bottle and not have a hangover in the morning.
Nice.
With whatever magic is in that bottle. I don't know why. I call him my boyfriend Corbel. I'll be like, Corbel's coming tonight, honey.
Because he makes
like,
you
oh, good.
Sad.
I like when Corbel comes. My husband's okay with my boyfriend Corbel. But it's a good one. It's like, it's not sweet, but it's not, it's just a really easy one to drink. It is, yeah. I mean, it's not sweet, but it's not really sweet. It's smooth and easy to drink. But then I Googled it. So when I found it, I was in San Diego and I'm like, what is this? Why does nobody know that you can drink this whole bottle and feel great and still feel, you know? And it's because it has a really low sugar content, like one of the lowest sugar content. And that's why, I guess, like when you, a lot of the mixed drinks, when you're putting the sugary syrups and all that shit into it, it makes you have worse hangovers. And
definitely.
Yeah, it makes sense when you think about it, right? So yeah, Corbel Brut champagne, low sugar and really good. I mean, save your sugar for donuts or something good.
Amen.
I don't even like donuts, but like, I love, it's not that I'm like, oh, don't eat sugar, because I'm definitely not that person. But I'm saying as far as your hangover goes, maybe lower the sugar content for that reason.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, Laurie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
It was so much fun.
You have a wonderful evening. And enjoy Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much. You do the same.
Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. I am joined once again by the fabulous Marie Kent from My Book of Mormon podcast. Marie, what are what are you currently recording on your podcast?
We are currently reading Non-Canon Revelations, which means something to me, but might mean something to your listeners. Do you know what it means?
That's like, as in it's not in my quad, right?
Okay. Well, no. Okay. So everyone who's listening to this, I'm guessing you've heard of a guy named Joseph Smith, you know, just throwing it out there. And he, of course, gave all these amazing revelations that are in this nice little book that you've probably heard of called The Doctrine and Covenants. Great. So on My Book of Mormon podcast, we have read through all of those. And right now we're reading the stuff that got taken out. So like there's a printing press they were making their very first Doctrine and Covenants, but then, you know, the evil Missourians came in and like burned down the printing press. And so people go out and they grab the pages. Well, what about the pages that we have, but they aren't really official because they were written, but they were just like excerpts. Let's read those. Let's see what they say. And some of them say some really amazing things about some of the founding members of the church saying that they are prophets of the Lord as well. Let's figure that out. So that's what we're reading.
Nice. So when I said it's not in my quad, does that not mean anything to you, Marie?
I assume you're talking about a college quad? Wait, no, the quad. That's like the book that has four books. Wait, you're going to have to define it because I remember hearing it, but I know.
So the quad is it's bound all in one leather book. I have one that snaps, so there's leather all the way around. So it's Book of Mormon, Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, and the Bible.
Book of Abraham?
Oh, yeah, that book. The Bible.
Okay.
The book that Mormons read about. That book.
Oh, that one. I read all the other one. You know, so that's what we do over on my Book of Mormon. But I'm here because you and I, we need to keep reading some amazing work by Spencer W. Kimball.
Ugh. I'm only saying yes because it's fun to roast it.
It is, everybody. Oh my gosh. So we're still reading excerpts of Faith Precedes the Miracle. Oh my God.
Discourses by Spencer W. Kimball, the one and only. Did I decide he was the 12th or 13th president? One of the two of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I blocked it from my memory. It's the only way to make it through this.
Not the Mormon Church, because that's the Winds for Satan Church. It's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, that's true. The Tijiga Colds.
There you go.
If you like write it all out. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to cover chapter 14 today, chastity, entitled Love versus Lust. And to get us all in the mood, Marie, I hear you have an earthquaking story for us. And I guess, should we define earthquaking before we get into it?
Yeah, please define earthquaking for me, just in case I'm thinking of something different.
You promise you'll tell the story anyway?
I promise to tell the story, regardless of what it actually means.
I haven't heard the story yet, guys. Okay, so earthquaking is a term that came out of Brigham Young University, which is the Lards University in Provo, Utah. And earthquaking is, it comes from soaking. And if you haven't caught our episode entitled Soaking is Fundamental, there's a reason why it's entitled that. So, soaking. Soaking is where it's the sex that God can't see, because God is a T-Rex and he only sees movement. So, soaking is where you slip it in. It's also called floating. You float it and you don't move because... the sin is in the movement. So you just let it marinate, you know. So earthquaking is the step up. It's the real exciting part. And seriously, Marie, if you have an earthquaking story, I'm ready to pee my pants. I'm so excited to hear it. But okay, earthquaking. There's a third party involved. This is a team sport. So earthquaking it's real easy to do at a college school because there's bunk beds everywhere because, duh, it's college. So you're a faithful wingman is on the bottom bunk, and you and your girl are on the top bunk, and you practice the art of soaking because soaking is fundamental. And then you get your wingman to create the movement in
the ocean. Oh, my God.
So he starts shaking the bed. So there's, you know, it gets the, you know, the whatever. Well, therefore, the movement is non-voluntary. So, you know, the rhythmic in and out of your soaking behavior becomes
voluntary.
Like, it's involuntary. It's not a sin. You can't be held responsible for it because you're not the one creating the movement. Duh. Like, this makes such logical sense, right?
Well, I mean, I think I'm going to disappoint you a little bit with my story because it's not that type of earthquaking. I was not actively participating or inactively participating in earthquaking. No, but I was putting together a bunk bed, or a loft bed, I should say, with my boyfriend. Uh-huh. So I got my oldest son a loft bed for his birthday. So my boyfriend comes over and we're, you know, assembling it because I'm cheap and so I order all the parts and so we're putting it together. And he was asking me, you know, how's the podcast going? And so I'm like giving the latest in the Mormon church, the Wins for Satan church. And he's like, the what? Which that was a great conversation. And so then I mentioned Mormon happy hour as like, maybe we're going to call it Wins for Satan happy hour, because that's fucking hilarious. Uh-huh. And so he's like, well, what do you talk about on there? What does she talk about? And I'm like, well, let's talk about the Mormon sex myths. So I bring up earthquaking because we're putting together something very, very similar to a bunk bed, right? And so I'm explaining the whole, like, you lay there, but it's in, but then someone below. And at this point, like, I'm kind of like using my hands to mimic like how it would work. And then, you know, my 3-year-old comes in, he's like, mommy, what are you doing? And I'm like, absolutely nothing, small child, we're putting together a bed. And I remember him just kind of, he looks at me and he's like, they do what? So then we like put, we loft the bed. And so I put it in the corner. And so we just sort of look at it. Like, if, like, how would it logistically work? Like, where would you put your feet? And so we're just kind of like looking at it, and he just starts shaking the loft bed, but we had just assembled it, so everything's tight. And he's like, you wouldn't even do anything because you can't even move, because like the bed wouldn't move. And so that just went on this whole topic of like structural integrity of bunk beds and how just it's a dangerous thing to do. And I was like, this is the least sexy version of earthquaking I have ever discussed. Because like we came to the conclusion, like, if you're actually earthquaking, you're probably gonna die because you're gonna shake apart the bed and it's gonna be a squished situation. So that is a myth, everybody. Don't earthquake.
It was bunk. Ba-doom-tsh. Oh.
Oh, debunking Mormon sex myths. Yeah.
We debunked bed, the earthquaking myth.
Yes. And so I was not earthquaked, and nor will I ever be earthquaked, because I want us to live.
Just get someone you don't know from off the street to be your wingman.
That sounds like a really safe situation that, yeah.
All the way around.
Oh. That is not the right kind of safe sex, everybody. No.
Oh, God.
Well, it's, yeah, I think it's just kind of funny that we're talking about what is clearly an immoral thing happening, of the shaking of your bunk bed. That's not immoral. That's just dangerous. But like, it comes up, you're thinking, is this, would the church classify this as a love or a lust situation? You know, I think we just need to learn about love versus lust from the man who is the expert in all these things, Spencer W. Kimball, don't you think?
Yeah, he is the expert of taking love out of, or fun out of, I don't know, taking passion out of life, taking the life force out of life. I don't know. Need I continue?
Oh, man, I like it, everybody who's going to read this along with us, you're going to learn this guy did not like fun. Not at all.
And he specifically didn't like anyone else in the world having fun.
Well, of course not. Why would, no, God doesn't want you to have fun. Mm-mm. I assume. Mm-mm. Yeah. Well, should we start this amazing discourse?
Sure. Where do you want to start? So what page do you want to start on?
Let's start on page 151. Because, I mean, Spencer W. Kimball, if you listen to our last discussion, it was John and Mary, where he's like hypothetically counseling this couple who's about to be married. And that was just a joy. I tell you what, I get the sense that this is a man who likes to start with a hypothetical. And so I want to start with this amazing hypothetical at the beginning. So at the very top of Love versus Lust, page 151. Mm-hmm. All right. You want to start or should I?
I'll start.
Okay, go for it.
Across the desk sat a handsome 19-year-old and a beautiful, shy, but charming 18-year-old. We are already having the, you know, younger or younger female, older male. Okay. Oh. They appeared embarrassed, apprehensive, near terrified. He was defensive and bordering on belligerency and rebellion. They had sexual violations throughout the summer and intermittently since school began, and as late as last week. I was not so much surprised. I have had these kinds of visits many times, but what did disturb me was that they seemed little, if any, remorseful. They admitted they had gone contrary to some social standards, but they quoted magazines and papers and speakers approving of premarital sex and emphasizing that sex was a fulfillment of human existence. Finally, the boy said, "Yes, we yielded to each other, but we do not think it wrong because we love one another." I thought
yes, absolutely. I just got to interrupt you and be like, yeah, I absolutely believe that if you love someone, it's okay to have sex with them. Like, it's okay. I'm on the boy's side right now. Be belligerent, rebellious, because I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you. Okay. I'm sorry. Keep going.
But Marie, you're just hearkening to those so-called intellectuals that, you know, are destroying the church.
We haven't destroyed the church yet.
So SWK continues, "I thought I had misunderstood him. Since the world began, there have been countless immoralities, but to hear them justified by Latter-day Saint youth shocked me. He repeated, 'No, it is not wrong because we love one another.'"
Oh. Again, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and as I was reading through this today during my lunch break at work, because I'm that person, I was reading this and I could think, no wonder these people are, you know, embarrassed, apprehensive, near terrified. They're talking about their sex life with this guy.
Right.
Like, they're talking about their sex life to someone else. Like, that is, I tend to not discuss the intimacies of, you know, my sex life with just some random person, or even like, and I don't talk about the no, I just don't. Like, this is, I like, and I know that bishops interviews and like temple worthiness interviews, like, I know that's a thing, but I'm so weirded out by it because I didn't grow up with this. I'm a never Mormon, in case you are unaware. I was raised Baptist and we did not have conversations like this. I tell you what, I just get so uncomfortable. I am embarrassed, apprehensive, and near terrified just reading this, let alone being the hypothetical person talking about it.
Right.
Ugh. Oof. Yeah.
So do you want to keep going on that paragraph, or what do you want to talk about next?
Yeah, let me just finish off this little bit and then we can talk about it some more. Mm-hmm. "They had repeated this abominable heresy," the heresy that, no, it's not wrong because we love one another. "They had repeated this abominable heresy so often that they had convinced themselves, and a wall of resistance had been built. Behind this wall, they stubbornly, almost defiantly stood. If there had been blushes of shame at first, such had been neutralized with their logic, so deeply entrenched were they in this rationalization. Had they not read in some university papers of the new freedom where premarital sex was sanctioned, at least not forbidden?" Oh my God. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to finish this paragraph and I got to talk about some history, everybody. "Did they not see the looseness in every show, on every stage? Had they not discussed this in the locker room? Had it not been fairly well established then that sex before marriage was not so wrong? Did there not need to be a trial period? How else could they know if they would be sexually compatible for marriage?"
Amen.
"Had they not, like, God, this is, he is making his own case for us.
Right.
"Had they not, like numerous others, had they not, like numerous others, come to regard sex as the basis for living?"
And this is my notes in the, like, in the margin. It most certainly is. It's a biological drive.
Yes. Yes. Now, everybody, this book was published in Year of Our Lord, 1978. And, like, all I can think when I'm reading, had they not read in some university papers of the new freedom where premarital sex was sanctioned? And I was like, new freedom? What are you talking about? Oh, birth control pills.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so birth control pills show up in like 1960 as an option. And then in 1965, the Supreme Court ruled that yes, you can, that like birth control pills can be purchased. But at that time, I looked this up, and at the time of in 1965, 26 states had state like laws saying that only married couples could have birth control pills. But then over the next like 5 to 10 years, those got phased out so that everybody could purchase birth control pills. So for the first time, women were able to have sex for pleasure and not have to worry as much about getting pregnant, which changes a pretty big social dynamic, am I right? Yeah. And so it's, so I see it as, it's not that where premarital sex was sanctioned so much as it was a thing that could be done, and you could, like, you know, kick the tires on the car before you purchase the car, i.e. put a ring on it. So I'm thinking that's what he's referring to.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is 1978. Yeah.
I didn't know about the whole you had to be married. That's
Oh, yeah.
The puritanical, like, non-separation of church and state, just, it's creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, because he was like, why would you need birth control pills? Because you only have sex when you're married. Right? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I did want to add, we were talking about on the first page, you know, we love one another. Sex when, you know, having sex with someone when you love someone, like, that's a great reason to have sex. You know, it's also okay to have sex with someone just because, you know, you want to have sex with someone and you both mutually think that it's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It is entirely okay to have sex with someone because you're on the same page about what you want and you've communicated beforehand about what your expectations are, your needs, your boundaries. Be safe about it. Condoms are a great thing to use.
Yes, please.
And, you know, communicate before, during, and after, have affirmative, enthusiastic consent from both parties. And then at the end of it, you can either part your ways to never see each other again, or, you know, stay together for every moment of the rest of your lives. Somewhere in between that, it's up to you and whoever you're with. Consenting adults, go for it.
Exactly. All right.
Uh-huh.
So did you have any other thoughts about what we just read, or should we move on?
I think we should move on because it gets even better, everybody.
Yes. All right. You lead the way.
All right. This young couple looked up rather startled when I postulated firmly and with positiveness. No, my beloved young people, you did not love one another. Rather, you lusted for one another. it makes me laugh because if anybody looked at me firmly in the eye and said, you don't love him, you lusted after him, I'd be like, yeah, that too.
Like, what of it?
Guilty? we're both doing it to each other. It's fine. But that's just me. I like having fun. He doesn't.
I just feel like there has to be some, like, element of definitional lust to have sex. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I have a hard time picturing Mr. Spencer W. Kimball ever considering any form of sexual affection not containing lust. Like, I don't know. In his mind, I'm pretty sure celibacy would be love, and anything more than that would be lust. Right?
Gross. I'm sorry. It's just like, you guys, we gotta have sex to have the next generation, and why not have fun while we're doing it?
Right.
I don't understand the problem here. It's not like our bodies are evil or inherently bad.
Oh, but they are. But that is the problem. The natural man is an enemy to God.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
That's what? No. Just no. But this boy and girl, they still have reactions. Colleen, tell us what their reactions are.
The boy and girl still sat still and respectfully. I was not sure if they were comprehending. You know, they're a little slow. After their wrong concept had been bolstered so long and firmly, it was hard for them to change immediately. They had defiled the beauty and the holy word love until it had denigrated to become a bedfellow with lust, its antithesis. And so I wrote in my notes, no, you did that, Spencer W. Kimball.
Yeah. He really knows that he's right. For some unknown reason here, I don't see love and lust as separate. Like you just said, like, you gotta have some lust if you're gonna be, you know, doing the deed, right? I would assume. Otherwise, like, what, like, if you're not wanting to have of the sex with whoever you're having the sex with, Are you consenting to that? That feels real gross.
Yeah.
I'm real like, unhealthy.
If there's no lust, that feels kind of rapey.
Yeah. Like, would you want to be having sex with someone who doesn't want to be having sex with you that you don't want them? Like, if you don't want each other, like, what a waste of time.
And I mean, it's not even that you don't want each other. Like, what if you do want each other, but you have to remain this like, okay, don't smile. Okay, don't get too aroused. Okay, we're going to try and do this mechanical thing that's called sex, but oh, don't enjoy it. Oh, we can't. Mm-mm, no kissing. Like,
wait, what? I don't understand. I just don't understand. I don't want to understand, I think, is also part of what's going on here.
Yeah.
Because, ugh.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing is, I don't think this is out of the realm of not even possibility, but of reality, that I honestly know, because I've seen comments in closed Facebook groups of active, you know, Mormon wives, that there are couples uh-huh. out there today having this kind of mechanical sex, and that they'll only have sex to procreate. So they've only had sex when they've conceived their children. So it's like five times in their marriage or whatever. Like,
oh,
it's
my God. A
real thing. I see it. So people are really taking this to heart, and that is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Because sex is a great way to show that you care for someone. And part of that is lusting after their fine, fine abs. Am I right? Yeah. You know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or their dreamy long hair, or their sweet ass, or whatever.
You know, yeah. That way they do that one thing, you know the thing. You know. Yeah. But, you know, enough of this fun. Let's back to Spencer W. Kimball. Mm. As I looked the boy in the eye, I said, "No, my boy, you were not expressing love when you took her virtue." Oh, my God. And that just sounds so rapey, which, nope. And to her, I said, "There was no real love in your heart when you robbed him of his chastity. Ugh. It was lust that brought you together. It was lust that brought you together in this most serious of all practices, short of murder."
Oh my.
Is this the sin next to murder, everybody?
Yeah.
No. I mean, yes, but no. Like, I have read that, the sin next to murder, that whole garbage. And, like, it's in the Bible logistically right next to each other on the same page. It's not, like, equivalent, it's just in a list.
Oh my God,
it's the wrong kind of next. Like, seriously, all you gotta do is go back to the source text for most of this, and it doesn't say what you think it says. Like, I have read the entire Doctrine and Covenants, everybody. It does not say what you think it says, and it's amazing, and I have so much fun with this because it's just so easy. Easy like sex, yes? Uh-huh. Or maybe it's hard like sex? No, I shouldn't say that.
All right, let's keep going.
Yeah.
So, Spencer W. Kimball. If one really loves one another, one would rather die for that person than injure him. At the hour of indulgence, pure love is pushed out one door while lust sneaks in the other. That sounds sexy. Your affection has been replaced with biological materialism and uncontrolled passion, which also sounds really fun. You have accepted the doctrine that the devil is so eager to establish. This is the important part. That sex relations are justified on the grounds that it is a pleasurable experience in itself and is beyond moral consideration. Well, we might disagree on moral when it comes to sex,
yes.
But justifying it on the grounds that it's a pleasurable experience, held to the yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Consenting adults, mm-hmm. and then have fun.
Yeah.
Like, literally, just have fun, everybody. It doesn't have to be this big thing. It could just be fun. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as someone who is currently unmarried, I need to read this next bit because it relates to me, I think. Question mark. Teach me about me, Spencer W. Kimball.
Yeah.
When the unmarried yield to the lust that induces intimacies and indulgence, They have permitted the body to dominate and have placed the spirit in chains. Also hot. It is unthinkable that anyone could call this love. No, it's only unthinkable to you, motherfucker. Sorry. Be polite, Marie. Be polite. You have ignored the fact that all situations or conditions or actions whose pleasures or satisfactions end with the termination of the act will never produce great peoples nor build great kingdoms.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
The yeah. Judgment. I just sit with that judgment. Oh, and that, yeah.
like that so
negative view on humanity. Mm-hmm. That no good people will ever accomplish great things if they have pleasurable sex.
Well, and heaven forbid you have pleasurable sex with someone and you produce a child together and then you live together happily, unmarried, for your entire lives. And you raise that child together because that child is definitely never going to accomplish anything. What are you on about? That is so wrong. Marriage is a piece of paper. It's a legal document that gives you some protections legally. And that's it. Like, getting married is not a relationship. It's just paper.
Right.
I mean, that's my opinion. Let us continue. In order to live with themselves, people who transgress must follow one path or the other of two alternatives. Okay, everybody, I'm going to find the one of two paths that I should take in my life. The one is to sear the conscience and dull the sensitivity with mental tranquilizers so that the transgression may be continued.
What?
The other is to permit remorse to lead to total conviction, repentance, and eventual forgiveness.
Dude, the world that this man lives in is sad.
Oh. Yeah. Mental tranquilizers, everybody.
What?
What? Mean? I don't know. I don't know. Like, is he saying that if you're somebody who's going to have of the premarital sex, you just got to drink a lot or go get a bunch of Xanax or something? I don't understand.
I think what he's trying to say, in all reality, I think he's trying to say, mm-hmm. In order to live with yourself, because you will be racked with such guilt, because I'm telling you that you should be racked with such immense guilt for committing the sin next to murder, that you will either have to dull your senses with mental tranquilizers, or you fix that shit up with conviction, repentance, and eventual forgiveness. It's just, it's all bullshit manipulation and fear-mongering is really what he's saying.
Yeah. How come there's not a third option of put a ring on it?
Shotgun what? Wedding.
Legit question.
I also don't agree with shotgun weddings, so, you know.
No. No. I don't know. I just think...
Yeah, I don't think having a baby is, you know, that should not be the reason for getting a marriage. I disagree.
No. Yeah, having sex once with someone should also not be a reason to get married.
Amen. Hey, I did that. I did that back at BYU. And I actually...
Oh, wow.
Side note, I only thought I had sex because I'm a dumb, inexperienced Mormon and found out that, nope, that was not sex. Mm.
But oh my God. Man. And then like, you got to get into the definitions of what is sex? Like, I don't know. Is it looking at each other with, you know, eyes where you just want each other in that lustful fashion? So you got to get married, or is it all the things and all the other things? I don't know.
Like, well, when I was six, I told my friend that someone else told me, or somehow I remember this conversation when I lived back in Washington. Mm-hmm. And I was like six, and my neighbor, who was also around that same age, like, he had to pee, and we were in the backyard, and he started peeing in the backyard, and then he informed me that when a man and a woman are naked together, that's called sex. So now you know.
Oh,
now you have your definition. Oh. You're welcome.
Oh, wow. Oh. let's finish reading this. your turn.
All right. So the next part I have marked off is 155, that the churches stand. Should we move on to that?
Yeah, we should.
Okay. That the churches stand on morality may be understood, we declare firmly and unalterably, it is not an outworn garment, faded, old-fashioned, and threadbare. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever, and his covenants and doctrine are what? Oh.
I just said nope. The whole God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I invite anyone to read literally any of the Bible or any of the Doctrine and Covenants, because depending on the day and whoever was writing it, Jesus is either super cranky or really happy, and God will either destroy an entire kingdom or God will bless an entire kingdom. No rhyme or reason. God changes all the freaking time.
Well, that's because, Marie, in the beginning, man created God in his own image.
What?
That's why.
Well, yeah.
That's why God kind of, you know, it depends on the writer. That's why.
Whatever. I'm sorry. Keep on going on. That's just, that one always bugs me.
Okay. God is the same yesterday, today, forever, and his covenants and doctrines are immutable. And when the sun grows cold and the stars no longer shine, the law of chastity will still be basic in God's world and in the Lord's church. Old values are upheld by the church, not because they are old, but rather because they are right. Pure sex life in proper marriage is approved. There is a time and appropriateness for all things that have value, but sexual encounters outside of legalized marriage render the individual a thing to be used, a thing to be exploited, and make him or her exchangeable, exploitable, or expendable. And just P.S., some people are into that shit, so let's let's not kink shame Spencer W. Kimball.
Do not yuck my yum. And also, define how having sexual intercourse with someone that you care about, in whatever capacity that means, how does that make you exchangeable? What kind of sex are you having, Spencer W. Kimball? Like, how are we exchanging? Is all premarital sex just one giant orgy? Where is that orgy? I have yet to find it.
She's
so, you know. Yes. So there are two kinds of sex. There's the chaste, unhappy Mormon sex and the orgies. There's nothing in between, obviously. What? How? Where? Why? Oh, I turned the page on that one, Spencer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're up next. But,
okay. Like some high-pressure salesmen who claim far more for their product than can possibly be delivered.
Tinder.
Sex exploitation promises what it can never produce nor deliver. So outside of marriage, improper sex life can bring only disappointment, disgust, and usually rejection, while it propels its participants down the long corridor of repeated encounters which are destined to fail.
Oh my God. See, this is why Mormons have terrible sex lives.
Okay. Has anybody in our listening audience ever had a friend who's in an unhappy marriage and you're hanging out with them and all they're doing is complaining about the terrible sex they're having with their spouse? Because I have had that conversation with friends, and it is absolutely wrong that just by having a legal paper saying you're married, that your sex life will suddenly always be about achieving your greatest goals and always love and accepting every aspect of the other person. No, there is disappointment, disgust, and rejection inside a marriage too. Like, what are you trying to sell, high-pressured salesman Spencer W. Kimball?
Seriously, like, can we just like speculate a little bit about what his sex life was like? Like, did he always
have
a
he had sex?
Well, I don't know. Like he has all these beautiful ideas of what a Mormon chaste sex life is, but I'm like, again, like, okay, high pressure salesman, where's the sex? I don't get it.
I don't, you know, maybe he was asexual, but he just couldn't accept that about himself because you're supposed to be fruitful and multiply. So even though he didn't want to, like maybe he had to force himself to meet this religious demand that didn't match his desires either. In that case, that's really sad.
I guess. Like, I literally don't get it. Like, was he having this amazing sex, or was he just like making up shit to manipulate and control people's sex lives?
That is also gross. I think the word of the day is gross. If you're playing a drinking game, go back, re-listen, and have a drink every time I say the word gross. I don't know. Like, sex should be something that you want to do. And if you don't want to do it, you shouldn't have to do it.
Agreed. Maybe he didn't get that. Maybe he didn't, couldn't say no. Maybe he was having unwilling sex. Like,
I don't know. Whatever's going on, it's not healthy.
No.
That's the one thing for true. Yeah.
Okay, so this oh my God, this next paragraph ends in the best sentence, so I have to read this.
Okay.
Illicit sex is a selfish act, a betrayal, and is dishonest. To be unwilling to accept responsibility is cowardly, disloyal. Marriage is for time and eternity. Fornication and all other derivations are for today, for the hour, for the now. Marriage gives life. Fornication leads to death.
It leads to the little death. Little deaths are orgasms, in case you're unaware.
Oh.
That's the term for it. I just realized, I was like, So like, marriage gives life, fornication leads to death. Really? Really?
Spencer W. Kimball, I mean, think of all those billions of children that you've killed.
Also gross. Illicit sex. I mean, depending on your definition of illicit, sure, I'll go with that. I would classify illicit sex as sex you're having with an unwilling participant or in a way that is harming someone else. But so like, if you are, absolutely not. Like, just because I would define illicit sex as you are in a committed relationship with one person and you go and have sex with someone else without your primary partner knowing about it, like that I think is very illicit, and that's very harmful because it's a breach of trust. I think illicit sex is having sex with a lot of people but not being safe about it and like deliberately choosing to be unsafe and spreading venereal disease. Like, that's illicit and you shouldn't do that. Wrap it up. But if he's just defining illicit sex as sex where there isn't a legal contract saying that you're married, I don't think that's selfish.
No.
I don't get it. I don't understand his justification here.
I agree. All right. What else? The young man is untrue to his manhood who promises popularity, good time, security, fun, and even love when all he can give is passion and its diabolical fruits, guilt complexes, disgust, hatred, abhorrence, eventual loathing, and possible pregnancy without legitimacy and honor. He pleads his case in love and all he gives is lust. Likewise, the young lady sells herself cheap. The result is damage. Life and canker to the soul. Okay, hold up. There's actually a whole lot to dissect in this paragraph. I actually didn't realize it. First of all, untrue to his manhood, promises popularity, good time, security, fun, and even love when all he can give is passion and its diabolical fruits. Okay, so what immediately when I thought of this, there was an outstanding study done by a professor at Brigham Young University on the effects of viewing pornography within a traditional and conservative religious structure, and how it is the damage that is done, and through viewing that pornography actually comes from the religion and the high standards mm-hmm. and the guilt that comes along with the pornography viewing, not the pornography viewing itself. So it's being yeah. a member of the religious community that actually causes all of the harm that comes from viewing pornography. And so that's what that's what I thought of when I was reading this paragraph, because he talks mm-hmm. about guilt, complexes, disgust, hatred, abhorrence, eventual loathing. Like, those are all the things that Mormons feel after they masturbate or have sex, premarital sex, because that's what he's telling them that they are going to feel. That's what we're all taught to feel. Like, again, and this is another drinking game. This is why Mormons have fucked up sex lives right here.
Ugh. Yeah. If you're taught that this is the way you're supposed to feel about something, you're going to try to make yourself feel that way because you want to believe your elders and the people, the yeah. authority figures in your life.
It just happens.
But it doesn't have to happen. Like, it's okay to express your human biological urges and desires, and you don't have to feel guilty about it.
No.
And like, yeah, and the possible pregnancy without legitimacy and honor. I feel fairly confident saying that if you don't want to be pregnant, you're trying not to be pregnant, please don't get someone pregnant when you're not ready or able to have to support a child or be together. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean, but there's always the possibility of pregnancy. Basically every time you're having sex, but that also applies to in a marriage as well. But just because you're married doesn't mean that you have the resources or that you're ready for it. And the without legitimacy part of the, oh my God, you had a child out of wedlock. That is just somebody choosing to be a jerk about your parentage. Like, yeah. Get over yourselves.
And I had a child. I had a child outside of wedlock when I absolutely wanted the child and I did not want the marriage. Like, we had both mm-hmm. come out of really shitty marriages. We just weren't crazy about the institution of marriage, but we definitely loved each other. Mm-hmm. We definitely lived together and we definitely wanted a child. So this whole like legitimacy and honor, like, you know, my child and our family lacks legitimacy and honor. Fuck you. No. Mm-hmm.
You know what? What I just realized right now. So my second child, I was married when I had him and I started divorce proceedings like 6 weeks later, which was a very dramatic time in my life.
Yeah.
And so he at the time he was a legitimate child and he like, on paper, I did all the right things, but he was also an accidental child. Yeah. You know, like I chose to have him even though we couldn't afford it. Our marriage clearly did not survive because we weren't even living together when I had him. And so things are fine now. Like, we have a very peaceful co-parenting relationship and it's working great. But like, I don't know about this whole legitimacy and honor thing because it is total bullshit because there was not a lot of honor going on in my marriage when I had a legitimate child.
Yeah.
So get over yourself, Spencer W. Kimball, you who have never had this experience and right. clearly are just making this up, because look at what he says, the phrase, the young lady sells herself cheap.
Oh, thank
Should
you.
Should she sell herself expensive? What?
I'm just irritated that he has to like, I mean, that to me, that's just women are whores. And he's just kind of like supporting this whole like stereotype that women sell themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's just like that's slut shaming. I'm sorry.
It is. Mm-hmm. And also look who's buying there, Spencer. Yeah. The result is damage to life and canker to the soul. I really don't see that. I see the result is shaming from people of the likes of Mr. Kimball and a certain aspect of society telling you that if you don't live your life this very specific way, that you are wrong, and you're you're making all the bad choices, and how dare you be guilty of all these things that we're telling you to feel guilty about, when the actual, like, what's behind it? Like, what, why does he need them to feel shame about two people, two adults who care for each other, that have, well, sounds like a really healthy sex life, but then suddenly they have to come in and talk to him?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They like, the bad part is that he is becoming a part of their sex life. Exactly. And that's gross.
That's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So to close this out, so there's a paragraph at the very end. Do you see the very last paragraph and how it starts?
I wish that I didn't see the very last paragraph, but I can see it. Yes.
On page 157, you see it?
Page 157. I went to 159, which okay. I didn't want to see that, but okay. I see the last paragraph. Yes.
Okay. So are you ready for this? We're just going to sing this one out. Are you ready?
I was born ready. Bring it on.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt.
Baby, don't.
Don't me. Hurt me no more.
No more. No, it just starts with the question, what is love? Or what is love? Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay. Well, that's it for that chapter. Woo!
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Marie.
I hate that I had such a good time talking about this, but I had such a good time talking about this.
It all needs to be said. God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if anybody on here wants to listen to me read through your religious texts, I do have a drinking game over there. It's my Book of Mormon podcast. I'd love to have you come over and listen, but man, I love coming on here to read this absolute glorious gold with you, Colleen. It's the best.
Well, you're coming back. Don't you worry.
Fuck yeah.
Well, good night, Marie. Mwah.
Yeah, good night, Colleen. Bye.
And that wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers.